Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name is Alex. I'm joined today by my co-host, Jacob Negro. How's it going, Jacob?
Good. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm all right. Pretty excited for today's episode. I've been jamming lots of Final Fantasy Sealed. It's been a lot of fun.
Me too. I'm very excited.
Okay. Are you doing more Sealed or more Pro Tour prep?
I've been doing more draft. I've opened probably between 5 and 10 sealed pools and thought about it, but, you know, looking at the cards overall for draft, so.
Yeah, well, there's definitely some crossover between draft and sealed, so that'll be useful still. So for today's episode, you guessed it, we're talking about Final Fantasy Sealed. We plan on doing a sealed episode for pretty much every set, particularly every set that's, you know, going to be on Arena, going to be for the Arena Opens, Arena Directs. A lot of the time, too, RCQs and Pro Tour Qualifier type events on Magic Online use Sealed as well. So I think it's definitely relevant to cover.
Yeah, and this weekend at MagicCon Vegas, I'll be there for the Pro Tour, but also there's PTQs, I think 4 across the weekend. Those are all going to be Final Fantasy Sealed as well to start with Top 8 Draft.
There you go. Perfect. So for today's episode specifically, we're going to be doing a bit of a kind of basics approach for Sealed, just kind of the first steps that you should take if you're relatively new to Sealed or if you haven't considered this before. And then in future episodes, we may or may not return to this, probably not as much. After we talk about all this, we're going to be going into the specific cards and colors in this set and what's good. That'll probably be more common for future episodes. But for now, we're going to start with just some of the basics. When we started this podcast, a lot of the planning was to poise Jacob as sort of the expert insofar as he tends to know more about the active formats for the Pro Tour and whatnot. But Limited's a bit different. I'm pretty up to date on Limited, and this is going to be a bit of a freeform episode, but should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I will say also, I've done pretty well for myself in Sealed over the years. On the MTG Elo project website that tracks all your stats, I think I am between like 75% and 80% sealed in win rate and competitive play.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. Maybe you're the expert after all.
Lower sample, but I do think what's nice about Sealed and what's nice about these episodes is that Sealed is pretty often has a lot of the same fundamentals from format to format. And also what's nice about an episode like this, I'm hoping, is that if you play Final Fantasy Sealed near the end of its life, that I don't think things will change, unlike draft, where the meta kind of changes and some people drafting differently are going to affect how you have to draft. Sealed is mostly just about playing what your best cards and identifying what they are. And there's a little meta game, but for the most part, if you have a deck with a lot of bombs and removal, that's what you're going to play. So
yeah, you know, Sealed, I think Sealed is a really underrated skill to be good at Sealed. It's the sort of thing that, like Jacob said, it can follow you around even as you, in future formats, you can kind of reuse these skills. And a lot of the time, people sort of just think Sealed is like a luck-based format with what you open, that sort of thing. But there's some pretty big edges to be had, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think sure, like draft has its own skill set and might be more complex overall, but I think Sealed's right there up there with it.
So when you first open your pool, Jacob, for a new pool, crack them open on Arena. Obviously, they show you the rares first. What's the first sort of thing you do?
Yeah, so showing you the rares first, or if you're opening your packs in paper, you'll see your rares as well. You know, you're trying to identify what your most powerful cards are, which for the most part are going to be your rares and mythics, but there's certainly going to be some powerful uncommons or even commons as well. You'll want to just be looking, you know, for what removal spells. You know, you don't need to sort all this out as you're doing it, but just keeping an eye on it, thinking about the strongest cards in your pool, because ultimately, like, your goal is Sealed for the most part is just going to be playing like the most powerful pool you can and your mana affords, which I guess leads in kind of the next step I would do in Sealed, which is I look at all my fixing pretty much before I start building my deck, because I think that could really define what kind of deck you can build. So in this set, I would say it's probably above average fixing. Coming from Tarkir, it's certainly less worse than that. But from a lot of other sets before Tarkir, I'd say it's a little bit more. I think the lands and artifact slots are about the same as most sets, but I've gotten the impression that green actually has a little bit more fixing than other sets have. Or maybe it's just because the common, like, Preach's Wanderings, I think, is actually pretty good. Instead of sometimes that common green fixing slot is pretty mediocre.
Yeah, so in this set we have all the dual lands, both ally and enemy color, which they've been doing that a lot more lately, but yep. they don't do it in every set. So that's a big factor for what kind of decks you can build in sealed.
Yeah, and those come in a slot in the pack, and sometimes that slot is a basic. And I think in this set, I didn't actually look it up, I think it is maybe exactly 50%.
It definitely, so I don't know the stats, because I just started drafting or doing the seals last week, although I've done quite a few. They definitely, you get less than I think the lands you got in Tarkir, but you still get a decent amount. But I've had pools where I just have one or two towns and that's it. So yeah. There's definitely some randomness to it.
Yeah, and that's only the two color towns. Like the one that's pick any color, that I think is just normal common in the set. So you could get, you know, as many as six of those or even more, I guess, if you're really lucky. But
and then I agree with you about the fixing in green, the power level, or, you know, how much they push each card that actually has fixing matters. I mean, that's something we'll talk about specifically once we get to the green cards. But it is worth noting that the fixing and the ramp is, I would say, above average at the common and common level. The ones
yeah,
I have here.
If anything, what it probably is it's probably very similar to a set like Aetherdrift, for example, in terms of fixing. But it's just that the combination of what the green fixing cards do and the fact that there's kind of a landfall sub-theme in green just make those cards all better.
Mm-hmm. So when I open my pool, I should look, see what my best cards are, and look if my mana can support playing, what, the most of those, basically?
Yeah, so this is, I guess, kind of arbitrary, but there's kind of some rules when it comes to splashing. And it doesn't mean that you can't break these rules, and it also doesn't mean that it's like you should always splash just because you could, according to these rules. But, like, for example, kind of a heuristic I'll use roughly is if you're splashing a certain amount of cards, and this only means like a single pip of splashing, not like splashing Ultima or something, that the number of cards I have in that splash color, I'll usually divide it by two and add three. That's pretty rough, and that's not exactly how I think about it, but in practice, that's how it happens, and the most common thing I'll do is probably splash two cards of a color off four sources.
Okay. Usually, I can give you my heuristic.
Yeah, go
ahead. That's interesting. I hadn't heard of that one. Mostly, the way I think of it is if I want to splash a single pip card, the minimum I need is three sources. It's the minimum. Yeah. And if I want to splash a double pip card, which is hardly splashing it, you know, but it's one way to think of playing double pip, like five drops or whatever, I need at least seven. And, you know, things like card drawing or treasures can sort of skew those numbers a little bit. You can kind of count them as like a half or a quarter or...
Yeah, and there's also weird things.
Some sort of math like that.
Let me just get the name of this card. Crossroads Village, the town that picks any color and then taps for that color once you've locked it in. You know, even that one is kind of weird because it's can only be one color per game. So it's whichever one you're missing, but if in your opening hand you're, let's say, a green-black deck splashing blue and you have a forest in this card, you're just going to want to play it on turn one and probably name black.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it doesn't quite count the same as just like a actual green and black dual land or something.
So actual dual lands matter more, especially if you're double splashing, which is really not recommended most of the time, but when there is a ton of fixing, sometimes it'll happen. I had a pool on Arena where I had both Kefka, which is the Grixis yep. insane card, and then Sin, which is the Sultai card.
Yep.
So I did end up playing both those in my deck. And, you know, another thing with those cards is they're expensive and they're good when you play them late. So if you don't have your fixing colors right away, it can often be okay, especially Sin, the 7-drop. You know, you have a lot of turns to find the color. Whereas, you know, you should be much more reluctant to splash cheap cards because the impact they're going to have when you finally draw your fixing in a lot of the cases isn't going to be as high.
Yeah, I would say that's correct, but there's certain exceptions. And, like, the reality of it is when I say I'm playing four sources for two cards, for example, is, like, what that kind of math is taking into account, which I don't know the math, but it's that you're much more likely to draw one of your lands that taps for this card before you draw that card. And pretty much all, like, samples, it's greater the bigger your sample is, but like, ultimately that's what you're trying to accomplish. It, playing four black sources does not mean you'll have black every game, but it means a lot of times that you've drawn your black card, you are, like, more likely to have already gotten a black source. And, you know, I think there's been some extreme... You know, I've splashed Sinkhole Surveyor in the last format, for example. You know, it's just a card that it's really high upside to have it on turn two. And I just think that splashing cards like that that are so powerful that can run away with the game is actually kind of worth doing in Sealed.
I agree. To be fair, that card could still do something later.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the biggest pitfalls new players make at Sealed and pre-releases and whatnot is they splash, they play three colors, but they have like three different colors of two mana creatures.
Yep.
And that's a pretty big, and you know, most people listening to this probably know not to do that, but it's definitely worth repeating. And then it's the sort of thing that, you know, the more of a splash color you have, you're going to need more than three or four of the source if you have a lot of them. There are ways to play just straight three colors if your fixing's really good, but you never really want to dip below, say, nine sources, eight sources for your main colors, ideally. Obviously, you're kind of walking this tightrope of making sure your deck has enough power level. How do you decide if your deck is, when, at what point you need to fix or you can't afford to be greedy or that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I guess after I look at my fixing, the next thing I usually do is look at my deck sorted by curve, actually, which can definitely be a little bit, I guess it's pretty hard to do on Arena. I mean, I guess it does it for you, just not the way I'd like. Sometimes, if possible, like on Magic Online, after sorting by color, I don't mind just sorting my entire pool by its mana value and just kind of looking at it all, getting an idea of what kind of, you know, spots some colors are missing. Because you're going to open your pool and you're probably going to be like, wow, I've got two blue rares and some blue card draw and removal, and I definitely want to play blue. But then you look at it and you discover you're missing out on any two mana creatures at all. And that's the thing that can be fixed if you identify perhaps one of your other colors has a lot of two mana creatures or plays, just early interactive plays to not get run over. Not that you need a critical mass of them in Sealed compared to Draft, but you do need something. And I actually think some of the best cards in Sealed are these types of two drops that kind of scale fine into the late game, especially as a top deck. Like, you don't want to just be playing two mana two twos. I think in green, while I'm looking at it, like Grand Pulse Ochu is a pretty good example. Just a 1-1 death touch that can scale into a threat. That's a card I'd be pretty happy to have. Those types of cards.
So in limited, in sealed these days, especially if you're playing on Arena and it's best of one and you have the hand smoother, people are going to be coming out of the gates pretty fast. I mean, you know, they're not going to have all the synergies and be able to draft 7-2 drops and pump spells and all that. But most people know that they should be playing things as early as possible. And so one of the big things I look for in Sealed nowadays is which colors can I play, which of my main colors can I play that allows me to play a certain amount of cards that cost less than 3 mana. I don't worry about a curve too much. Like, I don't worry about having 3s and 4s and 5s in proper amounts, but I do worry about having enough cards that cost either 1 or 2 that I can protect myself with. And then whatever cards you have that are good above that is fine, because on turn four, you want to cast two drops. That's totally fine if you don't have any four drops in your deck. But if your deck's all three drops and above, you're going to have trouble certain games for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And as to what you were asking earlier about kind of looking at the constraints, that's kind of what I was leading to with the curve, is you're kind of looking for two base colors typically, and that, I think, can sometimes be dictated by your fixing, but more often than not, it's going to be about the depth of your colors, or perhaps the power level of one color combined with the depth of another. And from there, that's where the fixing of your pool is going to play into it. And I know we've been talking about green cards a lot, and that's because, you know, green naturally has this fixing. And in Sealed, that just matters a lot. You know, it matters that if your pool has Kujo, one of the best cards in the set, the red-black rare, and you have some nice red cards, and then you're kind of deciding, you're looking at your red-black deck, but maybe your black's not that good. It's nice that you could still play some solid green creatures and then still have access to black sources via some green cards like Precious Wandering and Reach the Horizon, and then still put the Kuja in your deck.
Yeah, and Something we maybe could have brought up earlier, but while we're still in this section, the thing that's different about Sealed as compared to Draft is more people are going to have access to more rares because they see six packs instead of three at the beginning, and rares often get picked early. And because of that, you're going to have a higher priority of playing removal. Also, in conjunction with the fact that decks aren't going to be as synergistic, so you can't draft certain cards to make an archetype. You just have to build with what you've got. And for that reason, each deck's going to have... The biggest difference, I would say, between Draft and Sealed is that people's decks are less synergistic, and then because of that, they're worried about losing to bombs more, so they play lots of removal. So decks on average have more removal, more bombs.
The bombs are effectively twice as likely, I think. Just, you know, you're seeing six packs. Mm-hmm. I know in Draft, you know, a rare that is multicolored like Kuja could get passed a little bit further, but in Sealed, somebody had six packs to open that instead of, you know, right. I guess at the whole table there's 24, but still, individually,
well, there's
each
also
person
the factor,
only gets three first picks.
There's also the factor that nowadays the packs can have more than one rare in them.
Yeah.
So I think for that reason is another reason you're going to have more rares in your pool, because you can only, if the first couple of picks, you can only pick one at a time in Draft.
Yeah, so a card like Summon Bahamut, a colorless one, is probably going to be included in every single Sealed pool that somebody opens it in, maybe a few exceptions if they have a very aggressive deck. And then, you know, it's just a card that you're going to have to play against more likely. It also makes cards like Syncopate more powerful. Because that's just a much more clean answer to a card like that.
Mm-hmm. Syncopate, kind of mediocre discard spells that don't really see play in Draft are more of a consideration, for sure. Also, splashing or playing more kind of inefficient removal spells if you don't have other removal spells comes up. Sometimes in Draft, if you don't have removal, the plan isn't necessarily to play the crappy 5-mana removal spells, but more just to make your deck faster or something like that. But in Sealed, you might have to play those expensive removal spells.
Yeah, and I mean, literally right now, the Sealed pool I have that I was playing on Arena is like a pretty solid green-black deck, and I had the blue-black town and Precious Wandering and the wolf that taps for mana, Torgal. And I was just thinking about ways to round out my deck, and I'm actually just splashing Syncopate and the 3-mana uncommon counter spell as well that surveils too.
How do you approach synergy in Sealed decks as opposed to Draft?
I think it's not about all of your cards necessarily working together, but it's about looking for little, even two-card combos. You know, not like Splinter Twin that wins the game or whatever, but just little synergies, because the games are going to go a little longer. And, you know, like Kina, Ku Gourmet or whatever, the 2/3 that makes frogs if you make other tokens, you know, that's a pretty powerful card if you have other things that make tokens. So like that's something to keep in mind. Or I'm just looking at green cards still. If you have a Jumbo Cactar in your pool, a way to give that trample, you know, maybe you end up playing the +3/+3 trample blitzball shot in a deck that has Jumbo Cactar, but not in your green sealed decks otherwise, is like probably a great example.
Yeah, I'd say I think of it similarly. This set is a kind of a high synergy set, I would say, but it doesn't really, even in Draft, it doesn't create maybe the, how would you say it, the high end of synergy is not too high. So you're not doing anything too powerful once you have an all synergy deck, but a lot of the cards are kind of like secret gold cards in a way, you know. But when it comes to Sealed, of course, you don't get to pick your synergies. You sort of just have to find them. It's your job to find them and kind of mix and match. Oh, if I play this color combination, then I get the synergy between these couple of cards. But if I play this color combination, I get more synergies, that sort of thing.
Yeah, or like if you have, you know, a diamond weapon in your pool, the 9-mana 8/8 that costs less for each permanent in your graveyard, but you have absolutely no self-mill cards, then like you might not want to play it. Whereas it's an excellent card if you have like 2 or 3 self-mill cards in your deck, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
It's things where these cards that you may recognize as powerful for Draft, the slight build around nature of them matters a lot, and you need to identify if you can actually do that in your pool or in your deck.
One consequence I think of when synergies are lower is that aggro decks are worse, because oftentimes aggro decks are relying on synergies for their cheap cards, or even just, you know, having lots of a concentrated dose of some card. are you more or less likely to play an aggro deck in sealed, do you think?
I would say I'm definitely less likely to play an aggro deck in sealed, but I like to always look at it when I build my sealed pool. Sometimes not always. Sometimes you open your pool and it can be very obvious. You know, most of your rares are within two colors. You have a free splash or not. And then I would say in this set, because it is pretty bomb heavy, if you're not opening a lot of those bombs, that's when you want to be looking to your curve and what kind of aggressive deck you can have. I'm sure a lot of people have said this different ways. I think I heard actually LSV say it this way most recently, that like a fine aggro deck can still beat some of the strongest top-end bomb decks you've had just by the nature of ending the game before they get their bombs out and things like that, having them stumble. But if you're playing like a mediocre kind of mid-range or control deck that doesn't have these bombs and you play against someone else with bombs, you're just playing towards a game where they're going to draw those bombs and you're going to lose to them.
Yeah, so if you both have control decks and theirs is just stronger, it's almost in a way you're just going to flip over the
Decks, look at them and say whose deck is better.
Yeah. Exactly. Whereas if you have an aggro deck, you know, maybe your cards are a lot worse on average, but if your opponent has to play a lot of tap lands, you win the die roll, and you start with a 2-drop and a 3-drop, you may just win even if their deck is 3 or 4 points better than yours.
Yeah, and I think all colors in this set actually have some ways to become aggressive. I guess blue doesn't really by itself, it more has some pairs. Blue is definitely the least aggressive color in the set, and white is probably the most, white and red. But, you know, black has some wizard sub themes. That's going to be a little harder to pull off, but it's certainly possible. I really like the almost all of the drop select cards. There's a few I don't like Red Mage's Rapier, but, you know, I like kind of these white aggro decks. If you open two or more Magitek Infantry, I like those in white aggro decks. Just it's all about getting bodies into play and kind of moving your equipment around, which gives you a lot of things to do as the game goes along and making blocks difficult for your opponent, using your removal at key times. The other thing I would say with aggro decks that I think a lot of players kind of do poorly in sealed, you don't have to build it as most like in the most aggressive way possible. Make sure you're playing all of your best cards. You know, you want to make sure you have a lot of creatures. So if you happen to open so much removal, I could believe you shouldn't play all of it. But, you know, you should probably be playing all of your removal spells that can kill anything still, you know, and just... Yeah, maybe this is the type of archetype that doesn't want the 8s or 9 drops, but if you have those types of cards, like the summons, the white summon mythic and the colorless one, you should probably consider a different approach to your pool, because casting those cards are just really likely to win the game. But if you don't have those, but you still have, like, you know, maybe a 6-drop rare, things like that, you know, I wouldn't just exclude those. You don't have to play 16 lands. You can still play 17 lands because you probably have mana sinks with your equipment, especially in this set. I just think people fall into this trap that they have to be the most aggressive version of their pool they can be, and that's not true.
Yeah, sometimes the best versions of aggro decks in draft are like 15 and 16 lands, and you have all 1 and 2 mana cards and whatnot. But even if you have a good aggro deck and sealed, I mean, that's basically never going to happen. You're always going to have to play more of a aggro to mid-range type deck, even if you have lots of 2-drops and whatnot. So you really want to keep your card quality high, even though you're playing some cheaper creatures. You don't want to play pump spells that are bad and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it works out in a different way, too, where by being aggressive, you know, your opponent might have to use their removal earlier than they'd like or things like that. So in a way, you're kind of protecting your bombs. Mm-hmm. You know, you play this... I'm spacing on one to name, but you know, you just play a 6-mana rare or something and your opponent is out of answers because they used their Sephiroth's intervention on your 3-drop or something like that, because you went 2-drop into 3-drop and they didn't have anything. And then when you play these aggro decks, they're less likely like that you're going to want to splash. I think sometimes these are the category, especially if your lands permit or if you happen to be green still, you could definitely play a third color to splash something. I think my first sealed pool of the format, actually, I was kind of a green-white aggro deck splashing only the Bant Chocobo rare, because I had some birds, and that card's pretty good by itself. When it attacks, it draws a card, pretty much. But you want to be pretty light on it, because you just want your deck to be kind of smooth and punish your opponent's stumble. And yeah, I think this is pretty effective in these arena events, particularly because they're best of one, and I think oftentimes in sealed, you're kind of going to prepare your pool to try to go over the top of your opponents when you can. And maybe, you know, if you were playing in a paper tournament or any best of three event, then you could sideboard to adjust when you play against aggro decks, but there's no luxury for that in Best of One. And I know I'm saying this, but I also would say don't overly hedge for aggro in your Best of One sealed events just because I said this. I think, you know, most people build pretty slow decks. Like I said, you still want two drops. You can still be this slow controlling deck that does what I just talked about in an aggro deck every now and then, where you play Undercity Direrat and a three drop and your opponent isn't respecting their curve enough and they don't play a card till turn four and you've just dealt them like eight damage before they play a card.
Yeah, there's a lot there. First of all, a lot of the time in sealed, if one person gets to play a couple creatures before the opponent plays any, then any subsequent creature that the opponent plays, you can use one of your presumably many removal spells to kill it, and the game can end very fast. If you play a two drop and a three drop, and then your opponent's first play is a four drop, for instance, that's a pretty bad game for them, because if you kill the four drop, now you're hitting them some more, then they play another creature, you're hitting them some more, so things can spiral that way. Essentially, that's sort of how aggro decks operate. What an aggro deck really is it's a deck that's trying to cast more spells than your opponent, and the way to do that is to have cheaper spells, so you get to deploy all your spells faster. So back when you were talking about splashing is worse in aggro decks because you're not taking advantage. There can be situations where you're not taking advantage of the whole point of being aggro, where maybe you have two of your splash cards in your hand and you can't continue applying pressure. And then by the time you finally do find your splash color, then it doesn't matter because your card quality is so much worse. And once you've gotten into the longer game, you're just going to get beaten.
Yeah, you got it perfect. You can't afford for a card to be dead in your hand for multiple turns. You pretty much need every card in your hand to be working towards winning the game as an aggro deck.
So
yeah, I absolutely agree. I would also just add that I think things like flying or evasion in general actually plays out a lot better in sealed. I think it's kind of a thing that newer players grasp onto sometimes in limited, and then they don't let go of it for draft. But in sealed, it actually kind of remains true that sometimes, you know, you get into these board stalls and the flying creature can really, especially the largest flying creature in play, can really just go all the way sometimes even and just deal, you know, more than half your opponent's life total in the game.
Yeah, you know, intuitively, I agree. I'm not exactly sure why that is. Maybe because removal is more taxed on the bombs and whatnot, and so anytime there is a board stall, even little flyers can be a problem. But I definitely agree.
Yeah, I would say it's because little flyers typically play pretty bad on defense. That's kind of, they're usually statted pretty small, so they're not very good at blocking. And you just don't have to worry about that as much. So even though the flyers, I guess, are more likely to get killed, it's just more likely that, you know, you maybe play a creature, your opponent plays a creature on the ground, they both trade off, and then you play your delivery Moogle, and, like, it's an empty board. Just, like, games like that are more likely to happen, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, those are mostly the fundamentals for a sealed. So this is the sort of thing we probably won't cover in a future episode, but is there any other fundamentals you want to add on here, Jacob, before we move on to the colors in this particular set?
No, I think we'll just move on to the colors and kind of apply them to what we were just talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good call. Do you want to talk about what each color pair of the archetypes is? Or you want to just jump
into that? I don't think that'll matter as much for sealed.
Mm-hmm.
We can, like, talk about
as
it
as in blue, white as artifacts and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can talk about it when we get to the cards. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll start with green. I've for the YouTube video, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm going to have graphics. I just selected what I thought was the top cards, as in cards that when I see them in a pool, they're going to pull me towards that color. And so in theory, whichever color has most of these cards is what we're going to play. We're not going to read through all the cards or anything if you're not watching the video, so that's no big deal. But it'll just give you something to reference as we talk about them. Probably one of the first things we could cover in green are the three mana fixers that I have pulled out here, which is Reach the Horizon, Summon Fenrir, Precious Wanderings, and I guess also to some degree Town Greeter. What do you think about all these cards?
I wouldn't count Town Greeter as a fixer, but I think Torgol, I'm okay counting, even though it's vulnerable to removal. It's so cheap, being a 2-mana 2/2. But I guess it's really threatening.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's fair. I mean, Town Greeter, it certainly counts in some manner, even though it's not exactly a source. But if you, especially if you're playing a heavier three-color deck.
It's the type of card that makes playing three sources. If you're a black green deck with Sin and you have like three blue lands, it's the type of card that like pulls that together, because you'll have just seen a little bit more of your deck by the time you get to seven mana for sure.
Mm-hmm. And cards like Torgol, so this is the wolf, the 2-mana 2/2 wolf that taps for any color. I often don't, like, I will count them also, but I also don't count them as a full source because they're so likely to,
yeah,
to die.
Yeah, specifically that one kind of has a little bit of a target on its head because
it's so strong,
really threatening.
Right?
Even if it's not that strong in your deck, you don't have a lot of humans or even dogs or wolves. Your opponent doesn't know that, so they probably are. I mean, there's some removal spells that, you know, Thunder Magic and Suplex that I would always just play that are cheap and have a narrow range of what they could hit, but comparatively, mm-hmm. you're going to have some people that are going to cast Overkill on that turn 3 on the play or something mm-hmm. like that.
So these other cards, Precious Wanderings is interesting because it's kind of the 3-mana common that searches for a land that we see in every set, but this time it's both an instant and provides a +1/+1 counter to one of your creatures, so you can kind of use it as a 2-for-1.
Yeah, this is a really big reason to pay attention to your 1 and 2 drop creatures too, because that counter is a huge deal. Even if you're not getting a 2-for-1 out of it, I just think, you know, upgrading your Town Greeter or even like your 1/1 Death Touch, as silly as that sounds, to a 2/2 can matter a lot, especially because there's heroes tokens in this set. So, you know, as these equipments get moved around, or maybe you just answer the equipment outright, your opponent might be left with some 1/1s. And that would matter a lot.
I would definitely say if you have a, just as an example, if you have a 2/2 and your opponent's on the play and they attack with their 2/2 and they have three open mana with green, don't block in this set.
Yeah, I would agree. And then another interesting part about Precious Wandering and Reached Horizon is the fact that they can tutor towns, and we have these multicolored towns. And it's kind of nice because that does open the window a little bit more for a double splash, or if you're not doing the double splash, it still like fixes your mana a little better to go get the town out of your deck compared to a basic. But, you know, if you were a green-black deck and you wanted to splash Sin, a white card, and, I don't know, Kucha, a red card, and you had the black-red town, and your deck had, like, one Precious Wandering and one Reach the Horizon, that's, like, three black-red towns in your deck, you know? Like, mm-hmm. that's pretty nice.
Yeah, the Wanderings also searches for a town, which is kind of wild, something that those cards don't usually do.
Yeah, it also, they give some access to these utility towns, they're not the best to get, and actually I've somehow drafted Balam, the green blue rare town, many times, and I suppose in sealed flipping it will come up more, but I've hardly flipped it. It's pretty mm-hmm. tough. It's kind of unfortunate. It's like I wish the ability to flip it did not require it to tap, so that either you could play it and flip it all in the same turn, or when you have it, you could flip it and attack with it right away.
I kind of agree with that. In draft, it's almost contingent that you're playing kind of a town's deck to make it actually reasonable. Although, at the end of the day, it's still a green-blue tap land. So
it's still a little bit better than the green-blue town, and that might be the best color-paired town there is, because it's kind of what the archetype wants. So that's
right,
nice.
Right. Summoned Fenrir does not get towns. Do you like it more or less than the others?
Oh, I like it. It's probably my favorite. It's probably the most powerful of these cards.
It is my front runner for like mythic uncommon. For this,
having this card
set,
in your
it's
pool,
very excellent.
Yeah, I would say you're probably right that like if you open this in your pool, keep your eye on it, and it's like weirdly not a card that I think you want to splash. But it is a big draw to green because it's going to open you up to maybe splashing your powerful card in another color. And it's just so often a 2-for-1 in many ways. You know, it sometimes, you know, it gets a land and then it can draw a card on chapter 3. The counter on a creature can be a big deal. It also sometimes can get a counter on the creature and you could trade it off. Or sometimes it just gets a land right away and trades off before it even hits chapter 2. And that's still a 2-for-1.
Yeah, it's so hard to interact with. And it's so hard for your opponent to just attack into it once you've played it too. It's like, what are they going to do? Just trade their creature with something that's going to go away in a couple turns?
Yeah.
Maybe they have to. Are there any other cards here in green that stand out to you?
You have them here. I mean, Chocobo Kick is like a pretty nice removal spell. You know, that kicker allowing you to deal double power. It gives just a lot of range of creatures you can kill. I usually find I haven't like felt like I've struggle to kill things when I have that card in my hand, so long as I have pretty much any green creature. There's even some Death Touch creatures in the set. Vanille is a nice like Eternal Witness that, you know, even mm-hmm. you get to just run it. It's bigger. You know, I'd say this is a stronger card than Eternal Witness, and this is a card I would splash too potentially if you know, it's weird to say when you're, you know, you'd have to not be green and then splash this, but I think it's just such a strong 2-for-1. I think a 3-2 body for the same reason on Summon Fenrir is pretty good at just trading off of something. And I really love this design they've been doing to a lot more of these Gravedigger effects recently where they add some mill to it, because you can just run this out on turn 4 and hit your land drop a lot of times, or maybe spike a better card to hit. You don't have to just like wait till something is traded off.
Yeah, and it's also a 3-2. Pretty good size. The land cycler in this color is probably the best land cycler. The T-Rex. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. It's just so good as gaining 3 life. They keep making these 6/6s that gain 3 life. It's a pretty nice combination just to be able to kind of stabilize when you're a little bit behind. And yeah, it can turn the corner quickly. I like Ice Flan too. Just a nice tapper, mm-hmm. pretty big.
Yeah.
These land cyclers also kind of go into the realm of fixing, but it's awkward because they're all double pipped. But something to keep in mind, you know, if you're splashing a color, and especially if you're splashing color maybe a little more deeply, like you're not splashing 2 cards, but you're splashing, you know, like 4 cards, and you might be playing 2 of the basic of that splash color anyways, then that land cycler could probably get in your deck and maybe help a little bit.
Right, because they cycle for colorless, and then even though they cost double color, late in the game you might have both those colors, and you can just cast it some of the time. So.
And then at rare, we also have another fixer, which is Saw's Kotzroi, which is potentially, it's probably, looking at these, like the second best rare in green.
It's really good, yeah. I don't know what you think. I think Esper Origins and the Turtle are both excellent also.
Oh, I've played with Summon Titan a handful of times, and that card's messed up. I mean,
it is good. The one thing I will say bad things about Summon Titan is it's one of the rares on the here where you could answer pretty cleanly, but
yeah, that's
it
fair.
Is obviously
it's excellent. Removal right away, but yeah, it does do a good job of attacking for 7 trample and then next turn attacking for roughly like giving something roughly like plus eight in trample, which it just makes it really hard for your opponent to win. And starting on turn 5, that's you know, you could just be kind of on the back foot losing and play this, attack for 7, play another creature, and your opponent's dead.
Mm-hmm. Because it's funny, I opened this in my first pre-release deck and I put it in assuming it was good, but there was a part of me that thought like maybe it's not, because I hadn't played with these saga creatures at all, and they're interesting to evaluate because they do go away really quickly, but this one just has so big, has such an impact that it's definitely worth it even though it's only a 3 chapter creature.
Yeah, they've been really interesting to evaluate. There's some that I pretty much never play and there's some that I always play. They seem a little binary.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of a learning curve with them too. I think people, even when I've been playing them, I've noticed that people are trading with them a little too often, I think. And it's
beneficial
for me having it. Yeah.
Yeah. It goes both ways. And yeah, they're all, I think, either 3 or 4 chapters. And, you know, it's a big deal when it's a creature, if it's 4 or not. You know, like in green, I found Summon Fat Jacobo to be pretty good.
Yeah, me too.
If you had a bunch of other really strong, probably uncommon or rare 5 drops in your pool, then I could see not playing them. But, you know, if you're just looking for a solid, well-rounded 5 drop, I think that one is fine.
Yeah, for sure. It's a little odd in that, like, it's a little expensive for aggro decks. It's a little kind of mid-rangey and not great for ramp decks. But it's definitely one of the better ones. There's definitely a learning curve. I mean, sometimes it is correct to kill, you know, their saga creature on 1 or whatever. And that's a good example of it, is they're staring down a 4/4 that's going to give trampled everything. Are they really just going to let that live for 3
attacks?
Yeah,
exactly. That thing, yeah. Well, it can only attack twice, but still that's, you know, 8 damage or whatever.
Right.
That's a little hard to do.
Or blocks, too.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, I pointed this out earlier, but that's another trample-giving card for Jumbo Cactuar, which, like, it sounds a little silly, but I played a game recently where
I pretty much
was winning really hard and my opponent had Summon Fat Jacobo on turn 5. And like, so I had Jenova, which is why I was running really hard, but I didn't have any removal. And then on turn 7, they played Jumbo Cactuar and it's like, I'm dead. And like, I had just played like Diamond Weapon too. And it's like, if it's funny how it's like, if they attacked me for 30 trample on the next turn, like, I could have won that game, I think. That's how far ahead I was on board. But that's not what it is. It's 10,000 trample. Like, you just
live. Yeah. For people looking at the graphic, I didn't put the cactus on the graphic because I think on average it's not going to be that good. But if you're going to make it good, which you can, it's, you know,
there's 2 green commons that can give it trample, so that's pretty nice.
Give it trample, or if you have white and you can give it flying, I think is one of the other ways you could do it.
And white has the Aerith Rescue Mission. which can tap three things too. That's another card that I probably wouldn't play in a lot of pools, but if I was green white with the Cactuar, that's a lot more likely I would.
Is there on this graphic, are there any cards that you don't like, or are they all pretty good?
No, they're all pretty good. The Saz's Chocobo, I do really like, but in case you're like wondering, it's weird because it's a card that, you know, it's not a good top deck late in the game, obviously, but it's just so powerful in your opening hand that it just completely runs over the game on itself. So I think you just have to play a card like that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's lots of ways. You're going to landfall even late in the game sometimes when you draw your ramp spells too late and things like that. So,
yep.
But yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so let's move on to the next color, which we have blue. So, again, on the graphic, maybe not as many cards in blue, or maybe it's about the same. It's funny, this set seems pretty balanced compared to a lot of sets I've drafted and played CLF, at least so far.
I saw a stat today, it was related to draft. Cirkowitz is this, like, account that really likes looking at the data from 17 lands and stuff and just talking about it. And he said that this is one of the most color-balanced sets so far, like, ever.
It definitely feels like it.
And like even color pair, impressive. Like all 10 color pairs have pretty similar win rates.
Yeah,
that's nice.
That is pretty nice. Usually in sealed, one color kind of stands above the rest, and yeah, I haven't even been able to pick that out.
And then it warps it because you like everybody starts overdrafting it. But it'll be interesting if that doesn't happen with this set.
Yeah. So blue, interestingly, has some decent removal in this set, which is one of the things that blue often lacks and maybe why it's not as good in sealed sometimes. It's got two counter spells are pretty decent, Syncopate and Swallowed by Leviathan.
Yeah, I would say that in sealed, counter spells are a little better, but I like that these counter spells are in a format that's a lot more bomb heavy. They're conditional that your opponent has to pay mana, but luckily, bombs are pretty expensive typically, and I like that they both just say counter target spell, you know, not like non-creature spell or creature spell. Like, they cover all the bombs. So that's nice. They're also both, like I said, splashable. They're not double pipped.
Right. And it might sound a little weird to splash a counter spell, but if you have the good fixing, sometimes, you know, you have what's a two-color deck, and then you have a lot of fixing for a color, and you're just sort of looking for some opportunity to splash something.
It's a combination of like I can splash this, I can afford it with my fixing, and I have a hole in my strategy that, you know, it's like if my opponent just plays one of these bombs, I'm gonna lose every time, and my deck's not fast enough to make up for that, you know.
Yeah, and you know, you can't pass with mana every turn until they play their bomb and wait.
Yeah, but it's nice sometimes coverage, because if you're worried about the 8 and 9 mana cards in this set, then they're a lot more acceptable.
Exactly. And sometimes you'll hit their bomb with it, sometimes not. But Syncopate also has the additional synergy of you can overpay for it to trigger some of these blue and red cards that trigger after casting expensive non-creatures.
Yeah, and just on that topic, I've realized Ice Magic recently. I mean, the 4-mana mode is kind of obvious, but that final mode of shuffling it back in, I think it's pretty much there to be able to spend 8 mana for something like Ultros.
Oh, I agree. I think if those things didn't exist, they would have still had that ability, but maybe had it a little cheaper, because it does feel funny to get barely a bigger benefit but have to pay 4 extra mana from the second mode. But I think that's why. It's kind of just cool to do that sort of thing. Speaking of Ultros, I think that's quite a good 2-drop, even for sealed, though it's just a 2/1.
It's the type of thing I'm talking about where, like on the early boards, you know, it can trade off and block. And that's the thing about this, you know, even though we're talking about a card like Ultros scaling into the late game, when you're on the draw and your opponent plays, they make a Chocobo token on turn 2, and you have Ultros as your only 2-drop, and especially if you don't even have like a 3-drop or something, just block, you know, don't don't value the fact that your card's better later in the game. It's always contextual, but
and that's part of the reason why they're here, for sure. Interestingly, some of these cards are more synergy dependent than others. Like I have on this list the Valkyrie Aerial Unit, the 7-mana affinity for artifacts, big flyer. That's a really good card if you can also have a pool that just happens to have enough artifacts in it, but maybe not if you don't.
Yeah. And then something there's only so much room on the graphics, so I don't blame for not being here, but there's two blue common 2-drops that I actually kind of like, though I think they need a little bit of help. The first one is Sahagin, which is the 2-mana 1/3 that when you spend 4 or more mana on a non-creature spell, it gets a counter and can't be blocked. That's kind of in the same category as a nice early play that can scale into something larger. And in the same category as Scorpion Sentinel, which is the 2-mana 1/4 artifact creature that as long as you have 7 more lands, get +3/+0. So I wouldn't always play these in every blue sealed deck, and in fact, I think they often don't both go in the same deck, but there's blue decks that want the one that cares about non-creature spells, and there's blue decks that want the one that cares about lands or artifacts, and I think that oftentimes those play out pretty well for what I'm talking about, where you need some cheap early plays to not just get run over, but you also, you know, in the late game, one's an unblockable creature, the other can be a 4.
Yeah, I've liked both of those cards, probably especially the Sahagin, the 1/3, that one's been really good for me. It's interesting, those kind of cards are the sort of card that look like the filler commons that you wouldn't really like, but this set does an interesting thing where I feel like the bottom of the barrel cards are better in this set than in most sets, and those are some examples of that. I didn't include them because they're not cards that I look at my pool and think like, oh, I have to play this, but they are definitely cards you're going to play most of the time if you play blue, I would say.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what do you think the best of these rares are? Just out of curiosity.
Well, it's contextual. I think if you have a decent amount of non-creature spells, it's the Planisphere. It's just cheap. I think, you know, on that topic, this is a good category of if I opened a pool that was a nice red-black spells deck, which is kind of a sub-theme of it, and I had the blue fixing and I had the Planisphere, I would absolutely play the Planisphere. Because it can just run away with the game. It still scales pretty well on later turns. I like that about it. I have not played with Yshtola Rule yet. That card reads pretty good if you have combos with it. Jill, I know, is just pretty solid, flipping it back and forth. I've actually played with Summon Leviathan a handful of times, and it has some awkwardness in this set. I guess, first of all, we'll give it the benefits. Sahagin and Ultros do not get bounced by it, and having a thing in play that does not get bounced by it is really nice because you'll get extra cards out of it.
And you're playing blues, so you're more likely to have those in your opponent. Yeah, well, than your average opponent.
Yeah, your opponent having them and those things not getting bounced is also annoying.
Yeah.
And then the kind of downside I've seen with it, you have to be careful with your like job slot cards or other token things, because if you have a lot of tokens, bouncing them might be bad. And then Stuck in Summoner Sanctum and Sleep Magic are both these like tapping auras that you don't really want to play before you bounce all creatures.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And Stuck in Summoner Sanctum and the other aura. I mean, I put Stuck in Summoner Sanctum on this graphic. I almost thought about didn't, because things like that in sealed do have problems that they don't always have in draft, where because the games are going longer and because sometimes your opponent is more likely to play artifact enchantment removal to try to cover some of the rares that are really good that are artifacts or enchantments, they're more of a liability. And you have to make sure not to play edicts in your deck with them and that sort of thing also, of course.
Yep.
I've played with or against all these blue cards except for the Yshtola Rule. I actually had it in a pool, but I just didn't have any cards that were good with blinking it, which might be kind of a common theme. There's not a ton of cards that
I think I was thinking about it before, and like in another color, like Weapons Vendor comes to mind.
There's definitely some, but maybe less than most sets.
Yeah.
Especially since Job Select is like kind of one of the ETB things that everybody gets, but it doesn't work with that. I had Memories Returning in a draft deck, and it was actually quite excellent.
Yeah, I've played against it a few times. It is definitely very good. Also, just as like a note in sealed, Travel the Overworld, I'm guessing in draft, you probably have to care a lot more about affinity for towns. In sealed, if you're paying 6 mana to draw 4 cards, you're pretty happy, I would say.
Yeah, that's a good point. Or it's more acceptable.
Yeah,
6 mana for sure. We're in draft. Obviously, some games that's too clunky,
but it's just a sorcery speed opportunity is usually always pretty excellent sealed.
Yeah, and I would probably, especially if I had that plus a Kikirin Merchant, I would probably play off color or one off color towns, like one color is off just for these sort of things.
Yeah, and then I guess on the topic of like evaluating summons, I've liked Summon Shiva. That's the 5 mana 4/5 that taps something and stuns twice, draws a card for each tapped. There's a few synergies with it. You know, you have Stuck in Summon School and Sleep Magic, and in white there's Coral, the white tapper. Also, there's one more synergy in blue that I've done, which is Realm Sketching, which can clone it.
Oh, okay.
But I found it does a good job of doing like the weird combat summon thing where even though it only gets one hit in itself, the draw card for each tap creature your opponent controls is like really weird. Where it's a little bit better if you're an aggressively slanted deck, but I've played it in some more controlling decks now and been more impressed with it, mostly because I have these tapping auras alongside with it. But you tap something, it gets stunned, it won't untap. Next turn, you like tap something else. Then you have like a pretty big attack because your opponent has two tapped creatures. And then if they want to attack you back to punish you, you're going to draw a lot of cards. So oftentimes they don't want to attack at all. And then you still draw a card, even if you had no combos with it at all from the creature you'd stunned previously. But oftentimes I've drawn an extra card off it from one of my spells or even three. And like I said, if you curve it into Realm Sketching, which I think is also a very nice uncommon, just also double pipped.
Funnily, that's just one of those uncommons where I just haven't seen it in play much. Like, I haven't had it much. Opponents haven't had it much.
Got it.
I definitely do think it's good, but I'm not sure how good exactly.
Yeah. And then so that's Realm Sketching, the clone effect, just kind of, this is more a fundamental thing of Limited. They make a lot of clones, usually one per set. And sometimes they only clone your own creatures, and sometimes they can clone any creature. When they can only clone your own creatures, they're oftentimes not always even playable. And when they can clone any creature, they're oftentimes really good, because they're just going to at least be the best thing that's in play. That's not always true with like how things actually line up, but this one you can even hit artifacts. So like if your opponent, the best thing in play is a equipment with a hero on it, you can just target your opponent's equipment and also get the hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely a good one. That's another card I just haven't seen much of. I might not have even been able to tell you that you could copy your own card, so that's good to know. So let's see, we can move on to black here. So a lot of the times what people reach for black is their efficient removal. What do you think about black in general in this set? Is it just removal, or is anything else going on?
I agree entirely. It's like you're going to be looking at it for removal. Overkill and Sephiroth's Intervention and sometimes Vayne's Treachery are cards that you should really be on your eye if you can afford to splash them. You know, they're just pretty good answers to things in the set. There's a lot of really strong black rares here, though. So there's a lot of pools that you'll probably want to be base black anyways just to play these. I'd be a little worried about Dark Confidant specifically, though.
Yeah, I put it on so we could talk about it. I think it's a pretty interesting card in Limited.
Yeah. Little story. I was at the Ixalan Pro Tour. I played with the Raider. It was like a 3-mana 3/2 that said at the beginning of your end step, if you attack this turn, you did that same trigger. And I lost because of it, even though it was a pretty low curve deck. You know, my opponent, actually Sam Pardee, brought it up that even if your average CMC in your deck is maybe 1.5 or something, counting lands, that's not how these cards work in Limited. You take zero or you take like four or more, like a lot, you know? Like they're just really high variance. It's not that you lose 1.5 life a turn. It's either like you hit lands and this card's broken, or you hit spells and this card feels terrible.
Yeah, so I think that this card is maybe a trap in some sense, in that it's not the kind of card you want to put in every sealed, probably not most, but in it's definitely a card that can be good, I think. Like, I had a sealed that just happened to have lots of cheap cards in it, and my curve was pretty low, and I had lots of cheap removal, so I could have killed it. I had some sacrifice outlets, and I definitely think it was right to run it. Oh, I think it was black-white, too, so I even had some life gain.
Yeah.
And it was one of the better cards in my deck. So it's an interesting card, definitely worth talking about.
Yeah, but yeah, I think there's a lot of really strong cards in black, so you'll definitely be pulled into it often, I think. I think Jekt is really strong, also in the category of splashable. Summon Primal Odin, obviously really strong, not really splashable. Little thing about that card, too. Kind of the same. You don't really need Chapter 2 to connect, but I think in the same way Jumbo Cactar works, when it works, you win. I think people think of these little combos as doing something cool when it happens, and that's how it is in a lot of sets with cards like this, especially a card that says you win or your opponent loses usually is asking you a lot of you to do. This card's not asking a lot of you to get it through.
Yeah, totally. I'd be more inclined to play something that gives my creatures flying if I was in white or something,
I have
this card.
The same card, the one, or like something that gives +3/+3 and trample, same thing, you know, just you can easily steal a game that you were really far behind. And this card's kind of perfect at it, too, because it even makes it less likely you'll die the turn you play it by killing something.
Right. And it's also broken if you can't do that, but Black has even a lot of good rares.
Yeah, set. It does.
I've splashed Sephiroth. Even though it's kind of a cheaper card, I think it's going to be worth it a lot of the time. It's just really strong on the battlefield.
Yeah, I had a draft where I first picked Sephiroth and kind of built around it, and then I was impressed with both my deck when I didn't draw it, but really strong card. It's kind of exactly what we talked about in our top 10 list, but in Limited, where, you know, the Blood Artist effect is really annoying in draft, especially when it's counting both players. When two creatures trade off in combat, you're draining your opponent 2 life. That's a big deal.
But the fact that, like, you didn't... Faster right. and limited too, because everyone has creatures in combat.
Yeah, but it's like you didn't play a 2-mana 1/1 or 0/1 to do this. You played a 3-mana 3/3 that hopefully sacked a Hex Dies or a hero token or something and drew a card. I think oftentimes the board gets a little gummed up to get in the attacks of Sephiroth, but it's certainly possible, especially paired with some removal, to keep enabling it. And then, yeah, what it really does is just sits there really looming to flip or trade. You know, if your opponent attacks you, it does too big of an attack, then it can easily flip. So it's really just threatening on board.
And then we have Arden, one of the bigger bombs in the set. 8-mana, definitely worth drafting or building around. And then the Darkness Crystal, which most of the crystals, I think, are pretty bad. But of all of them, this one seems okay. I haven't actually played with it.
Yeah, I've tried the green one a little too, and I think it could be passable and sealed. That one puts counters and doubles them, so you can pay like 6 and tap it to put 2 counters on 2 creatures, which is pretty nice. But still, that could be a little unacceptable. This one, the life gain makes the ability a little bit nicer, too, because it gives you more time to play that type of game.
Right, right. That's pretty much the biggest reason why I like it. Another thing Black gets a lot that I've been going towards is ways to bring creatures back from the graveyard. Can be pretty big and sealed, because you're often going to be playing more creature rares that would be excellent to get back. In this set, also, the Sagas are going to be going to the graveyard a lot, so you're going to have a little bit more targets, I think, more of the time.
Right on, I could see splashing, especially in a green deck that has some of that self-mill. You know, green-black's sort of the self-mill combo, but maybe your pool says you should be green in another color, but you could still splash some black removal and also fight on. Evil Reawakened, I think, is really powerful, especially because of the cycle of common land cyclers. Also a card that you could keep in mind for splashing, for sure. You can definitely kind of set that up. You can even do some cute stuff. If you're a little deeper on the splash, you could even include Malboro in your deck, like get the swamp you need for Evil Reawakened from Malboro and then get it back.
A lot of the problems with the zombify type cards is sometimes you don't have a creature in your graveyard and sometimes there's only a bad creature. This kind of fixes both of that. Well, this set makes this card better in a lot of ways because you're more likely to have a creature in your graveyard because of the sagas and the self-mill. And then even if you have kind of a crummy creature, this is going to make it bigger to where it's actually still a threat. And then it's a non-creature that costs 4 more.
That's true.
So that's come up for
me. You know, that kind of falls under the little combos interaction things I'm talking about, too. You know, where if you can splash black in your red-blue spells deck that cares about 4 or more, and you have stuff like Sephiroth's Intervention and Evil Reawakened and Circle of Power, keep that in mind. You know, those things triggering could matter. Not to make your deck clunky, but if you're lacking it in your blue and red cards, for example, then that's something you could be looking for, is to splash a card that maybe enables that.
What kind of decks would you put Summon Anima in? That's kind of an interesting one. That's the 6-mana 4/4 menace that pains you a lot, but also draws
cards. Yeah, I've been worried about this card a little bit in draft, but I'd imagine in most of my Black Sealed decks I'm going to play it, unless I just felt like I had too much top end.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
Maybe blue-black would be the place I'd be most worried about having it, because blue doesn't tend to have as many good defensive cards.
But. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that looks particularly bad or something I missed on here?
No. I think Black Mage's Rod is really good if you're triggering it just a decent amount of times.
It's a good aggressive two-drop for sure.
It's kind of the defining card, I think, for the Black red aggro archetype in draft.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't include the double black like edict effect because edicts and sealed usually aren't too great, and I haven't been super impressed with that card. It's hard to cast. Yeah. So for red, notably less cards here, so that could matter, but there's some good ones. It's got some good cheap removal and whatnot. What do you think about red in general in this sealed?
Yeah, so I think red's kind of has some issues. I would say a common you missed that I really like, is it called Warrior's Blade? Let me find it.
Is that the 4-mana job select?
Yep, it's the 4-mana job, Warrior's Sword. So that's basically a 4-mana 4-3, which is okay, but the weird thing about it is even though 5-mana to equip is a lot, you know, you trade off this 4-3, and +3/+2 is a lot of stats. That basically says whatever this is on is just like an unignorable creature. So compared to the other job select cards, I think like the front half of it is still serviceable. It still trades off. And like the fact that it's kind of like the biggest of the common job select things like actually matters. Because once you actually get to the stage of the game where you're equipping it, it matters a lot.
Okay, I can see that. I haven't been super impressed with that card. It seems a little slow.
Also, it's a 4-mana non-creature spell.
That's true. I have liked it in the equipment. When you get good equipment payoff cards like the Gilgamesh or some other of the rares here, it can be much better. There's a bonus sheet rare, too, that searches for an equipment and puts into play, and it's very good with that.
Yeah, like, for example, there's an uncommon, Barrett Wallace, like 4-mana 4-4 reach. When it attacks, does damage equal to the number of equipped creatures equal to the defending player. I think Warrior's Sword is better than that card.
Yeah, I could see that. I didn't like that card that much either.
Yeah, they're not amazing, but, you know, I think it's better than Call of the Mountain Chocobo also, actually.
Okay, I've liked Call of the Mountain Chocobo. Just seems like the kind of card that is flexible to go in every sorter deck.
It is a 4-for-1. Mountains of 2/2s don't always count as cards.
That's true. What? It's a landfall 2/2.
Yeah, but on blocks, these 2/2s are kind of bad, and they trade for something that was like on an equipment or whatever, and you don't have an equipment. On the topic of splashing removal, you know, Suplex and Thunder Magic are definitely really good removal spells, and your base red decks are going to play all of them. I definitely would not stretch my mana to splash these cards in sealed. I've had plenty of sealed pools with cards of this category where I splash them because I just feel like I kind of have a free red splash with the amount of sources I have, and I'm like, sure, I'll put these removal spells in.
Yeah, in general, the better removal spells to splash are the ones that are more versatile, that can kill bigger things. But yeah, in a pinch, I mean, Thunder Magic is going to cost you 2 red to do the biggest mode, so that's definitely a downside.
Yeah.
You're not really splashing Choco Comet. That's a really good card, though, right? I think it's good.
That's a great card. Yeah, it could draw you into red.
The rares here are, compared to the others, these are a little to be desired. There's certainly some really good ones.
Gilgamesh is really good. If you have the spells deck, Cerberus is really good. They're kind of asking a lot of you. Cypher Almacy is pretty good without... It's kind of interesting because I think it's 2 text box are at odds, and I know there's also... is it Squall? There's a white black 3/4 with the same first line of text that says like whenever a creature attacks alone against Double Strike. I do think that whenever a creature attacks alone against Double Strike plays out a little better in red. So I actually kind of like this card more, even if his connect ability is a little hard to pull off, though not always true because you might be able to use a removal spell on their one blocker they left up to play around it and then hit them and use that same removal spell on the thing they attacked with or things like that. Or, you know, kill it, and then they either have to chump block, or you would just cast your thing from your graveyard anyways, so they end up chump.
Some of these cards are also kind of build-arounds, like the Summon My Girlfriend Cerberus is is definitely a build-around card.
Yeah.
Acids and Sorceries. Zelda.
I had... The game I first picked, or the draft I first picked, the Cerberus. The first game I played, on turn 3, I played the Edict you said you don't like, and then I played this, and then on turn 4, I played the Edict, and then on turn...
Nice.
On turn 5, I played the Edict because that was turn 4. And then on turn 6, I played the Edict again. I just had 6 wizards, and my opponent played 6 things, including something of job select, and it didn't matter. They were just all gone.
What on earth? That card does get better in multiples. One of the reasons it's probably better in draft than sealed is
it's a lot better when you build towards it.
And you have lots of wizards, critical mass.
Yeah, being in the wizards deck, it lines up.
And the second and third one you cast is obviously better, yeah. Zeldinked is a card you probably wouldn't even play unless you had a synergy with it, but it can be extremely good with some of the adventure lands.
Yeah, it's really good with, the adventure lands. It's a full-on combo with. You can bounce them every turn. I guess some of those aren't good enough to do, but the green one and the red one come to mind. And also, speaking of green-red, he's kind of a green-red-gold card in my mind because he cares a lot about that mechanic of landfall and the Chocobos. That being said, I think if you had a green deck with a lot of that Chocobo sub theme, and you thought another one of your colors was really good that wasn't red, you should keep an eye out if you had Zell to maybe splash it, because he is extremely
just
good
single
at the
Chocobos.
Yeah, and single red.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, on to white. Back to having a lot of cards on the list here. So white has some pretty good removal spells that you'll be... Only one's really splashable, the Fate of the Suncrest, but it can hit non-land permanents, so that can be nice and sealed. And then the Aura Sight is a strong card if you're doing double white.
Yeah, and then an uncommon battle menu is pretty splashable, I'd say, oftentimes. You know, kills big creatures, which mm-hmm. is what you care a lot about.
Yep. I put as one of the better commons Magitek Infantry. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, though I think you'll want to make sure you have two in your pool at least. The more the merrier. But two, they make a lot of cards like this that care about having multiple copies of it, and typically...
this one's better than they usually are.
This one's better than they are, mm-hmm. yeah. And having... Especially, it's a combination of things where I think just straight up, without context, this one's a little better than those ones usually are. So long as there was artifacts in the set, and sometimes this attacks for two on turn two, which is nice. But also, getting multiple bodies out of a card, I think, matters a lot more in this set, specifically in white with the job select theme. You just want to have these bodies in play to move your equipments around, and you just keep saying, you know, your little small creature that was a 2/1 has two equipments on it, and then you attack, and they have to do something about it, and then you just go on to the next thing you have.
Let's see, Dion is one of the... probably the best rares in the set if you're white.
Yeah.
It notably, its flippability is double white. Would you splash this card if you only had like three white sources or whatever?
Yeah. Let's say hypothetically, I just didn't expect to ever flip it. Would I splash it? It's probably a little bit more contextual. It's pretty likely I would. And then I guess that's not even true that like you'd never you in a very long game you would be able to flip
yeah.
it. Also,
every deck would probably be able to splash it, just wouldn't happen.
I haven't
very often.
Done a check on what knights there are in the set in other colors, especially. But you know, if you happen to have some knights in other colors, that matters.
Thinking
like
red,
Cecil comes
like
to mind,
equipment.
The black rare,
yeah,
the 2/3. But and giving that guy evasion is kind of nice because you could flip him. But
one of the rare artifacts I think makes knights when you equip.
Yeah.
Or I not guess. Rare, job select artifacts.
Well, yeah, I see the uncommon Dragoon's Lance makes knights, but doesn't really matter when you're in white.
Yeah, I think one of the red ones do. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyways. So all these cards, white has a lot. I've been playing white a lot in sealed. It sort of is, a lot of the commons are kind of focused on being aggressive, so it's a little awkward in that sense. But if you look at the uncommons, there's just a lot of high-quality cards.
Yeah, I agree. It is weird. I used to be, you know, long ago, in the days of lower power formats, if I had a card like Ultima and I was playing a white aggro deck, I would still put Ultima in my deck. But now, I'm unsure, especially Ultima specifically with the artifact text, killing my own job select things.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's a card that certainly could steal games, and if you're playing best of three and you decide with your white aggro deck that you don't want it, I think that's reasonable, but you have to keep in mind that you could sideboard it, especially on the draw or things like that where you might be on the back foot. You could adjust your deck a little when you change it. But I do think nowadays when you're trying to capitalize with these aggressive decks and sealed, that one is a little bit out of the scope of what I meant, where just play your best cards no matter what, because it's just a little bit too off the path. And I think it's also because cards are more powerful. You don't get to like play this game of like, oh, I'll like underdevelop or not develop at all and then Ultima and get my 3/1 or something on turn 5 and then start playing the game and developing all my little things, because like your opponent's bombs they play after the Ultima again will just like outclass all these little things.
Yeah, I do think in general decks get more focused and limited than they used to. If this card was just, say, Day of Judgment, or was one less mana, didn't blow up your own job select things, probably played every time.
Yeah, Day of Judgment, I think you're right, is like growing all your sealed decks if it existed. Yeah,
but if you have a white aggro deck, especially maybe a red white aggro deck where you have all the job select cards, I could definitely see not including this, even though it's kind of a bomb in a controlling white deck.
And then so Summon Knights of the Round, probably one of the most unbeatable cards in the set, one of the ones I've been hinting at. Also a little awkward in the white aggro deck. It definitely makes you want to play more of a controlling deck to get to that stage of the game. White Aura Sight really nice with it. Kind of the perfect card. Gives you mana, stabilizes you.
Mm-hmm. There are a few ways, even in your aggro deck, to kind of cheat extra mana in your deck. Like Delivery Moogle can search for the
world map.
The world map, that's a way to get some extra mana. Yeah. If you have multiple white aura sites, you're going to have
the
a lot
four
of mana.
Colorless Ring that taps for two colorless, is the tapper, kind of plays nice overlap and more, maybe a more aggressive deck because the life loss is a little less bad, and then also can ramp you into this.
I actually haven't played with that card yet. It looks kind of bad to me.
I think you should only play with that card if you have cards like Summon Knights of the Round and Summon Bahamut, or you know,
like
maybe
huge Arch, cards.
Like, yeah, seven or eight mana cards.
That was kind
of
my
what I'm
assumption.
You really want both halves. But also in these white decks, to be fair, the two mana can kind of help with job select moving sometimes too. And like I said, in the aggro deck, I think the pay one life to tap something, like tapping down blockers, which you still are often going to do on your opponent's turn, to be clear. That's kind of how these cards play out. So you get like both their attack and their block out of their thing out of the way. Paying one life sounds a lot better. When you're playing a control deck and you're trying to like not die, paying one life to tap something I've actually found has felt really bad.
I want
to
say I love Moogle's Valor. It's a pretty sweet card. I had it one of my sealed pools, and I played against one of the better players at my locals, and he said he also had it in his sealed pool and didn't think it was very good, but after I beat him so badly with it, he he put it in.
Yeah, it's nice that you can use it on attacks in an aggro deck because especially as the format gets longer, these cards can get really telegraphed sometimes.
They can, for
this
sure.
One's not as bad as I'm thinking of New Way Forward from the last format. Where
I hated that card.
I died to New Way Forward, not died, but you know, basically lost the game to it way too many times because you're just playing Arena and not focusing. And but
if you were really dialed
the light
in,
goes on in your head that like that's what your opponent has. Moogle's Valor is a little bit tougher because oftentimes your opponent plays out their whole hand and this is their last card. Is kind of the ideal thing for it.
They could also like just play it. Like if they have a lot of creatures in play and you're like trying to play around it, they can still use it.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't attack into it, they could still just end step, make their Moogles and be happy.
Yeah. Okay, move on to. So the next one I have, pretty much all the multicolor cards are good if you're in their base colors. And maybe except for a few, but I think most people will figure if they're playing a green-white deck, they should play with their green-white gold cards or whatever. So I just put multicolor cards that are splashable. And these are all pretty much ones you want to look out for if you're
Yeah, I'd say some of them you want to make sure you're doing the thing that they kind of say you want to do.
For sure.
You know, you some make sure you're casting spells with tele. I'll say some exceptions I know. Kuja, you don't have to do the thing. There's actually a really weird play pattern. I had a black-green deck and I splashed this, and I hardly had any instant sorceries. But it is also this really weird play pattern with this card where, like, so the tokens come into play tap, so it doesn't happen immediately. But, like, you make a token, next turn you make another token, and then your opponent maybe played a 4-4 or something, and they attack you. And, like, you can just chump block with the token, like, and keep the front side in play. And
pieces of cardboard.
Just keep use it to gain life and flip and make O1s that can chump block. Like it's just a completely broken card, even without any synergy.
Yeah, some of these cards are more build around than others. In my last sealed, I had Kefka.
And yeah, Kefka's really broken.
I had it in play and I already did it and I was feeling really good about myself, and then I attacked and the ability triggered again and I didn't understand that it also triggered on attack.
When I played it, I knew it triggered on attack, and then I was like playing a game with it, and I got to 8 mana, and then like I've read the backside once or whatever when I reviewed the spoilers with you, but then like the entire draft up until I actually had him in play with 8 mana, I actually read the backside, and I was like, what's going on? It's just super broken. Like, not...
It's so broken that like you have to make sure not to deck yourself with it. That's how broken it is. One of those kinds of amount of card draws. Yeah, I think if I had known that it triggers on attack, I probably would put it in our top 10 cards for the standard, funnily enough. I think it's quite strong.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
anyways.
Gladiolus, you don't have to be a landfall deck for this to be a good splash, especially in a green deck.
That card's pretty strong.
Every land you have, and as long as you have a second creature in play with it, it means your board will be very threatening, even if you start drawing lands at the end of the game. On turn 7, or, you know, if you started your turn of 6 lands in play, keep in mind, you can like play this, get your lands, play another land, and like give something +4/+4, or two different things, +2/+2 in a turn. It's pretty potent.
Would you try to play Absolute Virtue in your pool if you had it? That's one I was a little bit unsure about.
Yeah, I have a draft deck with it now.
It's pretty like
kind of feelers, but
it's a lot to pay 8 mana for something that can be answered so cleanly by commons, removals, and whatnot.
Yeah, my guess is that like if I was playing a pool that already kind of could play to a good long game where an 8 drop doesn't seem like a stretch, which a lot of pools in this format can, then I'd probably include it. And if, you know, like it's also 8, so splashing 4, it's a little easier. But it probably wouldn't be the reason that I do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, certainly is going to win if it gets a stick in play, but unlike almost all these other cards, it doesn't generate any value whatsoever, and you're paying 8 for it, so it's definitely notable that it's not as good as a lot of these other cards. So next, I have some colorless cards, and not all these cards are good, but the thing with colorless cards is you could technically play them in any deck. So which of these would you play almost all the time, and which of them would you avoid, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I would say none of these I'm going to play in 100% of my pools, but some of them are pretty high up there. If I'm playing 3 colors, I'll probably play the first world map often, mostly focused on the basics part. They can get kind of clunky, and the buyout of getting a town doesn't really help, because a lot of the towns are either colorless, which you don't want in your 3-color deck. So like I kind of count world map as a land, but I also don't want a bunch of them. I could see playing world map in like 2-color decks, specifically black-green, if anything, because you want permanents in your graveyard. The Relentless X ATM seems like a pretty strong card, but it's a 6-drop. So it'll make most of my pools, I would guess, unless I have a lot of other powerful, like rare and mythic 6-drops, which, to be fair, those there might be things that draw you in your colors.
It's pretty bad defensively compared to most 6-drops, right? Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, if you can trade off and then later it comes back,
yeah,
it's still nice.
Yeah, I agree.
The UFO doesn't seem... It seems like you really need a lot of towns. You really need that 3-mana activated ability to make this into a big flyer to, I think, consider playing it at all.
Yeah. If I was short on early plays and I was kind of like a controlling or ramp deck, I'd probably play it.
Yeah.
Just to have the blocker. Blitzball,
I think you do want to be keeping in mind either two things. The second line of text, or that you care a lot about having artifacts. Comically, I know Titus, Blitzball champion, plays very well with Blitzball because he's attacking thing that taps something on attacks and also wants artifacts to enter.
The flavor.
So those two cards,
the flavor,
are nice friends, which is cool to see.
Yeah, usually these cards are pretty borderline, and it all depends on the sort of the extra bonus you get along with the tap to add 1 mana of any color.
Yeah, it was interesting because in Aether Drift, for example, there was 2 of them and they were both pretty good. So it definitely just matters.
They get better if you're playing more than 3 colors also, because if you're doing,
yes,
like double splashes, the add 1 mana of any color can be huge.
Yep, because it's a true, you know, this counts. If you're a 2-color deck splashing 2 other colors, you get to count your Blitzball towards 1 source for each of the other colors. Like, it's not going to really have a fail rate unless your opponent suplexes it or something, but...
Mm-hmm. Also on this graphic, I have a lot of the rare artifacts,
yeah,
that you could get. Buster Sword, Masamune, Regalia, Genji Glove. Which of these do you like?
The Regalia, I think I like the most of these. You definitely want to be a little bit more aggressively slanted, but even then, Crew 1 is nice, because you can just have a lot of your weird, even defensively slanted creatures, and play this, and crew it and attack, and get your land, and pull ahead that way.
I would assume this is the one that, out of all of them, I'd be most likely to play in every deck.
Yeah, I agree. It would mostly just be about your creature count or something feeling too weak to not be able to play it.
Even then, a lot of the slower decks are going to have, because Crew 1's so easy, so.
Yeah. The Masamune, every time I see it in a draft, I read it, and I don't really understand, like, what the second line of text even can do in this set. The first line of text. Yeah. I get the Sephiroth holding the sword, so that, just making sure that
you flip him twice as fast.
I
had my first sealed on Arena. I had both of these in a pool, and I just put them both in. And then the Masamune was, I thought it'd be pretty bad, and it was actually better than I thought it'd be. So
yeah, I mean, to be fair, First Strike and Must Be Blocked is like a good way to sometimes, It pairs really well with larger creatures. It almost makes me want to consider like playing it in my green decks. If anything, you might have some extra mana too.
Yeah, it doesn't give first strike on defense, and it doesn't give any sort of augmentation. So it is a bit awkward.
Yeah, you kind of need large creatures to go with it, and there's a lot of mana. Buster Sword seems pretty good. You know, thinking about connecting in that line of text might sound a little win more, but I was just talking about liking an equipment that costs 5 to give +3/+2 as you move it around, and this does that for 5 mana total and eventually only 2 mana.
Equip 2 is kind of the sweet spot. Anything more than that is kind of rough, but
and then even if you're not casting, you know, it also says draw a card and cast, you know, when it hits them it's powerful, and giving that much stats means your opponent might be in a pickle where they either have to chump block or let you hit them.
I've definitely found Buster Sword to be a good card.
I had not played with it yet, and then today playing sealed with the deck I just talked about, my opponent played it and equipped it and then was too far behind on board and lost terribly, so I still feel like I wouldn't play it. Just a lot of mana.
Yeah, equip 5 is just so much, and anytime I mean, some of the equip 5 cards that are good in this set are job select cards, and this isn't even that. I'm actually a little surprised this isn't a job select card of some kind, but
yeah,
you just can't put a 5 mana equipment in your deck and then expect to be able to pay 5 more and then expect for your opponent not to kill the creature and then expect for this effect to even be good on the board. It's just not a good card. It's definitely a trap.
So I guess one thing.
Sure. I was going to say that covers all our slides and the cards, but if there's anything else you have.
Yeah, well, there's a bonus sheet in this set that came to mind.
That's true.
And my understanding is the rarities, like, they have a rarity on them, uncommon, rare, and mythic, and those are kind of, like, off by one in reality. So, like, the ones that are uncommons are about as common as rares, and the ones that are rares are about as common as mythics, and the mythic ones you'll see very, very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, a lot of them are double-pipped things, but there's, I guess, I'm thinking about, like, ones that when you see, you're really going to want to go out of your way to play them, because I think that could be the case. Like, there's Urza, Lord High Artificer, and you should pay that card. You know, was a constructed all-star in Modern, and if you can have some artifacts it makes it a lot better, but it does just basically have like 5 mana, draw a card and then play it for free tacked on, which is a really powerful activated ability, and it even gives you like a mana dork. If you had no other artifacts in your deck, I think this is still a card you should play. Maybe not, you know, warp yourself into playing blue if you literally had no other artifacts, but it's a huge like upside card. Yawgmoth is really broken. Sire Conrad is one of the ones that's uncommon, and that card's always been just a huge, great, like, mana sink type card in Limited that wins on a stalled board really easily.
Yeah, they're kind of, these bonus sheets are kind of all over the place, huh? I'm looking at the full one. I think most of these cards, you know, if people have seen before, they should have a decent idea of what they're like. But, I mean, some are kind of strange. Like, there's Dark Ritual as an example.
Yeah, I would not play Dark Ritual. One you might not know if you play Limited is Akroma's Will, which at least it's in the Mythic, so that means it's very, very rare. I guess they've realized what this card does. I'll read it because it's weird. It's 3 and a white, instant. Choose one. If you control your commander as you cast a spell, you may choose both instead. So that's not happening. It's just choose one. Creatures you control gain flying, vigilance, and double strike until end of turn is one of the modes. And the other one is creatures gain lifelink. Creatures you control gain lifelink, indestructible, and protected from each color until end of turn. That first mode, flying, vigilance, and double strike until end of turn, is really easy to be lethal.
Absolutely. It's
only 4 mana.
This card is a huge bomb, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's a card that's splashable, too. White is the more aggressive color in the set anyways, so if anything, you're going to not want to splash it to reliably cast it and be more likely to have your highest curve. Kenrith I've already had a couple times in this format. He's just a really strong card that you can find ways to splash off towns or things to use.
Mm-hmm.
You can splash Kenrith himself.
I'm trying to see cards that are maybe, because a lot of these Through the Ages cards are like constructed all-stars, but that doesn't mean they're going to be good and limited. So there's things like Rhystic Study.
How do you feel about that one? I played against it once in a game that I was missing land drops, and it was obviously annoying, and I've never let my opponent draw a card with it. It's probably going to play out like Stone Rain a lot, which is not a card that you always play.
Comparison.
But if you are, like, you could definitely be like a white-blue aggro deck, and I could see it being pretty good, because Stone Rain could be pretty good there. And then also, it eventually punishes your opponent for trying to double spell, too. You know, obviously, it is a punisher mechanic, so there's going to be spots where they're just going to say, like, I have a play so powerful, I'm going to let you draw a card here.
Yeah, in some ways it can be worse than Stone Ruin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. My inclination is that this card's not very good, but I'm willing to be wrong.
Yeah, that's how I am with it too. I guess keep in mind that like Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push are in the set, both at this uncommon slot. So, you know, if your opponent has a single black or red up, that's a thing that could have, you know, if you were only looking at the bonus sheet. Mm-hmm.
And people are probably pretty likely to play those if they open them, and they're not that uncommon, so.
Yeah. Primeval Titan can be a huge thing for the Landfall deck. There's the Atroxa in the set. That's a huge bomb. Yeah, a lot of these are pretty strong, and like you said, they've seen playing constructed. I guess Najeela's one that hasn't been constructed, and it was mostly a commander card. It's a 3-mana red 3/2. And it says, it's a warrior, and it says, I haven't looked at the other warriors in the set. It says, whenever a warrior attacks, you may have its controller create a 1/1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. I've played this as a commander in CDH before. That's basically worded as best as possible. Like, it's not whenever one or more warriors attack. Like, it's a thing that when it attacks, makes a tapped and attacking warrior, and then those warriors moving forward will, like, make more and more attacking warriors. Like, as if you already have a warrior in play when you play this, you, like, immediately get a thing, and then next turn, if you attack with all your warriors, you'd be attacking with three of them, so you'd get three more. Like, it goes out of control really fast.
One more I can think of, since it's going to be relatively common, Stroke of Midnight, which is Memories of Nibelheim. Is this a removal spell you'd splash for, or is it bad?
I would not splash for it. I would call it a bad removal spell, but you should not ignore it if you are light on removal.
Yeah, it is really important to have removal for bombs.
Yeah.
And I would say 1/1s, you know, they can be equipped to. It's kind of like giving them a free hero, so that's not great. But in general, I mean,
yeah,
they don't do a ton more
outside
of that.
I played it in a white-black draft deck where I had 3 Hecties in my draft deck, and I thought, well, at least I have, like, some little value 1/1s to kind of cover.
Trade, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Nature's Claim? Would you play that in your green sealed decks?
I think in this format,
Saga creatures.
Yeah, the Saga creatures. It's a pretty good like tempo swing for 1 mana, and then also job select. It's pretty likely I would. I guess now that we mentioned it on that topic, there's Airship Drop, I think, is Airship Crash, which is the 2 in a green instance, destroy an artifact, enchantment, or creature flying, and has cycling for 2. That's probably a pretty main deckable card in Sealed.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it has cycling anyways.
That's a good point to bring up. I don't think it. I would say it's main deckable. I agree, but I don't think it's one of the better.
If I had better things, I wouldn't play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But it could sort of fit a niche for you.
Yeah, this is kind of weird. I meant to bring it up on the colors, but I'm glad I remembered. I think, you know, it's pretty important in Limited in general to make sure you're playing a lot of creatures, and the job select things count as creatures, because ultimately that's just going to be your best way to contest the board or pressure your opponent. You got to just be careful with like how much air is in your deck, like card draw, or maybe too many removal spells that are hitting too many small ball things. Because ultimately, like having a big blocker can stabilize you against, you know, like your 4/4 can counter 3 of your opponent's 2/2s potentially in a game of Magic. So that matters a lot in general. But also in this set, I found that the white cards want you to have a lot of creatures to move your equipments onto, and the green cards want you to have a lot of permanents in your graveyard, which job select actually doesn't do, but creatures do. They trade off and go to your graveyard. So I've actually found in this set, more than any set I think I've ever played, I've paid more attention to like my creature count and cared about it a lot more.
Okay, that's interesting. I can't say I've thought about it in that way. I'll have to think about that next time I'm building a pool. I mean, in general, in Limited, creatures are pretty important. They're quite good nowadays. So, and I don't think Seal plays terribly different than Draft when you're actually playing the games once the decks are built. But
yeah,
I see your point. There's a lot of spells that create creatures and that sort of thing in this set. So
yeah, that matters for the white thing I was saying, or stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, the spells that create creatures, I count for the kind of fundamental thing I was talking about with creature count.
Yeah.
The green thing is kind of its own thing where I'm like, you know, I sure would like if my Town Greeter put permanents in my graveyard, or if I played creatures that traded off so that when I play Cod of Darkness on turn 5, it gives -3/-3 instead of -1/-1, or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I would consider that all the fundamentals of Limited and paying attention to those sort of things and how many creatures you need and all that. But okay, well, that'll do it for our Final Fantasy Sealed episode, folks. Thanks for listening. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to do a Sealed episode every set. I know there's not every podcast does Sealed. It's kind of the ugly duckling. Most are just constructed or draft podcasts, so look forward to that. If you join our Patreon, at the moment we've got it set to the lowest, it's just $1 a month. If you do become a Patreon and you are playing in the Arena Open, feel free to shoot us your build. We'll see if we can recommend a change or two. You can also find us on YouTube. Again, you're going to be able to see the graphics for this episode on there. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you find podcasts, really. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.
I have a Sealed story. I was trying to think of something, and I remembered a funny Sealed story. It's not so much about gameplay, but just a pretty interesting experience I had. So this was, I don't remember the year. It was Grand Prix Portland. It was going to be a modern Grand Prix. I was playing Grixis Death Shadow, but I showed up on Friday, and it's kind of one of those situations where my friend Chris had booked the hotel, but only under his name, and he wasn't getting in till late Friday night. I had showed up, you know, like mid-afternoon in Portland. So I went to the venue with our friend Easton, and I was just looking for something to do. I checked in my backpack at the hotel, so I didn't bring anything with me. And I saw they had a Sealed event. It was Guilds of Ravnica Sealed, so that might help understand what year this was, which I had actually played a lot of. I'd played this Team Sealed event of that format, too. And I saw that if I the prize tickets, and I saw that if I could 3-0, you would get one of the Ultimate Masters box toppers from the prize thing. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to try to 3-0 and just get a box topper. That sounds fun. So I play the Sealed event, and I look at my pool, and I was really struggling with it. And, you know, it's timed.
Yeah. Real-life events are timed. That's something to remember.
And then kind of in, like, the last 5 minutes, I kind of realized I actually have a really broken pool. This was like,
oh, no.
I was, like, built a Jeskai control deck kind of splashing Find Finality in a very weird way, is how I'd put it. And my deck also had, so Find Finality is like a 6-mana, give all things -4/-4, but you get to put 2 counters on one of your creatures first, so it often saves one of your things, kills everything else. The Dawn of Hope, which is like a 2-mana white enchantment that you can pay 4 mana to make a 1/1 lifelink, and says whenever you gain life, you can pay 2 mana to draw a card. These are all like a little worse in today's format, but pretty strong bombs, especially in a control deck where I basically got to play all of my removal. And that format actually had a guild gate per pack. So you always opened like 6+ fixers. Plus I had some extra fixing, things like that. Anyways, I'm just playing my deck like pretty completely absurd. And then the third round, I play against somebody who, like, kind of in the middle of game one gets a bit, like, disengaged with the game. You know, and I figured, oh, I guess he just figures, you know, he's just going to lose and he's kind of sick of it. And then game two plays out, like, pretty similarly. I draw a lot of the same cards that I'd drawn in game one. And then afterwards, he's talking to me, you know, he's like, you know, that's a pretty good pool you have there. He's like, can I look at it? And I'm like, sure. And I handed over, including, like, the sideboard. And for context, I didn't bring anything with me. So I went and bought sleeves from a vendor and was holding my deck in my hand around the venue. Like,
oh, no.
Have no other cards on me at all. And I give him this.
You cheating?
Yeah. And then he looks through it all and he says, you know, there is no deck list for this tournament. And I just think people cheat in these all the time. And I think you cheated. He basically tells me straight up. And he calls a judge and says, I think my opponent, you know, their deck was too good.
Judge.
Yeah, he just says, I think his deck's too good, and I just, can you verify that it was legal or whatever? So this was before play boosters, so packs always had like 1 rare, 3 uncommons, and 10 commons, and then sometimes 1 common was a foil, and the foil could be any rarity. So the judge just literally sort out my pool. You know, there's like an extra foil uncommon. Yeah, they actually did it. They discover my pool is just completely illegal. I don't think they counted up the commons, but, you know, it had only 6 rares. It had, you know, the 1 extra uncommon, so like 19 uncommons. And And they're like, yeah, it's totally fine. Just a strong pool. That's how sealed works. And this guy says, well, I'm not signing the slip anyways. And I was just kind of in disbelief at what was happening. So the judges walk up with the match slip and tell him this guy won. The guy, other guy didn't sign it. And they're like, okay. And I go and I get my prize tickets and I get my box topper. And then I wait to open the box topper till all my friends are at the hotel. And I open it and it was Karn Liberated, which at the time was one of the best ones. And it just made it feel so much more justified to have like gone through all that.
Nice. Boy, who would cheat in a real small event like that? And if you even did get cheated, how do you care enough to make a big stink about it? Interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
What's that? Was I guess that's not... I mean, there's some ridiculous things. I mean, people have had pools with multiple pack rats and crap like that, and he's complaining about like an above average pool.
From what it sounds like. I played like four rares also in my five color deck too. Like I could have played because I had like a double green rare that I didn't play, stuff like that. And yeah, it was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Too bad you didn't have Karn. Probably would have played Karn.
Yeah, too bad.
Cheating. Yeah.
Yeah.